This nation was founded on the principle that all men are created equal.
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
That all men are created equal.
I'll tell you what freedom is to me. No fear. I mean, really, no fear.
Created equal.
From WDET in Detroit, this is Created Equal. And I'm Stephen Henderson. I'm in the studio here with our producer, Carrie Jr. the second. Hey, Carrie.
How you doing, Stephen? We got some little tiny tourists going around the station today that are going to be getting into our business, seeing what we're doing.
Yes, they are keeping a close eye on us here at the studio.
Yeah, but today we want to be looking at our public officials, keeping a close eye on them.
Right. We're able to keep a closer eye on them than we ever have here in Michigan. We recently were the beneficiaries, I guess, of the first personal financial disclosures ever filed by public officials here in Michigan. And that is thanks to some changes that we, the voters, made to the laws and the regulations here in the state a few years ago. Mm-hmm. Today, we want to talk about, you know, what we learned in those disclosures, what it means to have that level of transparency mm-hmm. for the first time here in Michigan. And of course, what else we might be able to change to make our public officials even more accountable to the people they represent.
That's right. Transparency is the key word today. And these first filings occurred Monday, April 15th. And so we've gotten a closer glimpse into their personal financial documents, not just campaign financials, which is what we're more commonly used to understanding. So like you said, a couple years ago, we passed a proposal that requires our public office holders to submit personal financial disclosures. And the process is administered by the Secretary of State. And you can go on the website, the Michigan website, and search financial disclosures, and it'll come up and you can search for your public official. It'll show all those documents online. So this also comes right on the heel of some recent charges being filed against a former House Speaker, Lee Chatfield. Mm-hmm. And so I think it begs the question for us to know, what else can we understand and get more understanding of in terms of how our officers are using their money?
Yeah, a key question about Lee Chatfield, who, as you point out, was the Speaker of the House a few years back, is how much would we have known about what he is accused of doing if he had been, you know, required to file these kind of personal financial disclosures? In other words, could you have prevented some of this? Or would the climate in Lansing have been different because people knew, hey, I've got to report these things, and they might have avoided more of these things. Also, before we get started, I want to give just a little nod to Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson, mm-hmm. who is the state official who has been pushing this kind of reform really, really hard since she has been in office. The massive reforms that we have enacted to voting and voter participation and transparency in the state really are a product of her vision of the way that that democracy ought to be open and accessible to people. So she deserves credit for convincing voters to do this. And we're off and running with the idea of personal financial disclosure.
So who are our guests today, Stephen?
We've got two people who are really, I think, best word is experts on this stuff. Two reporters, Craig Mauger, who is a state government reporter at the Detroit News. He has been following the whole idea of finance and campaigns and public officials for many years, even before he was at the Detroit News. He was part of a nonprofit that that was really tracking money and politics. Also with us today will be Zach Gorchow. He is the executive editor and publisher at Gongwer News, also the co-host of WDET Gongwer State Politics podcast, Mishmash. Both of these guys have spent years really following this stuff, so this will be a really eye-opening conversation.
All right, let's get into it.
Craig Mauger and Zach Gorchow, it is great to have both of you here with us on Created Equal. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Here.
Yeah. So I'm just going to start with both of you. telling us very quickly, what do you think we've learned in this first public disclosure that that we got from public officials in Lansing? What do we know that we didn't know before? Craig, I'll start with you.
You know, it's a strange situation where you can say, I think we learned a lot, but we also maybe didn't learn as much as we
as we wanted to, right?
Yeah, it's a weird conundrum. I mean, this is, as you noted, this is a historic moment last week. We have never in Michigan had the opportunity to know really anything about who the people are who are representing us in the state legislature. So I'll start with that, but it's a historic moment to know how many of them are working outside jobs, how many of them, you know, have debt related to, you know, going to college. That's a major issue for a lot of people right now, having college debt. How many of our lawmakers can relate to us in that, for those people that have that kind of debt? How many lawmakers have consulting gigs where they're working for political institutions while also serving as an elected legislator? I mean, we learned information on all of that in these reports. What did we not learn? Well, you know, we didn't learn how many of them are raising money through secretive nonprofit accounts. Mm-hmm. We did not learn how much they were making in some of these outside positions that we had. We didn't learn the financial details and some of the real pieces of information that might have illuminated whether there are policy changes needed on some of these fronts.
Yeah. Zach, what do you feel about what we got out of this first disclosure?
Yeah, I agree with all of that. I was just sort of rereading some of this just a few minutes ago. And it's easy as a reporter, myself included, you know, to get caught up in like, well, this really wasn't everything that they should disclose.
Right.
Those amounts are definitely amounts of money from outside jobs, stocks, various things, value of property. Those are important items that I think eventually need to be a part of this. That being said, I mean, we did find out, you know, members who serve on boards of organizations and disclose that they do receive compensation for it, or working for outside political groups, those who have brought income from jobs in addition to their state legislative salary. It's certainly not nothing.
Yeah.
There is a fair amount of new information we have learned here. But as Craig mentioned, you know, the nonprofit fund piece is glaring.
Yeah.
That's going to have to be dealt with. And then I think the other piece that is still hanging out there is for those who did disclose that they were received travel to go to a convention, they didn't have to say where they went or who paid for it.
Yeah.
They just said that it was their costs were covered. And that, I think, is an important piece of information.
Yeah. In a little bit, I want to get more specific, I think, about the things that we could add to this disclosure and the things that would tell us more. But before we get to that, I just want to back up a little bit and talk about why this is important. Why does this matter? I think, you know, there were stories about this disclosure when it happened. And of course, there was a lot of journalism about the proposal in 2022 to make this possible. But I always feel as though we don't do the best job of explaining to our readers or our listeners or our viewers, citizens, why it matters that they know the personal financial details of the lives of the people who represent them. Zach, tell us just quickly why this matters.
Well, it's all about conflicts of interest. Are people, representatives and senators, representing the 90,000 or 270,000 people they were elected to represent, or are they advocating for their own interests? Very quickly, I'll mention an example that always sort of stands the test of time to me. About 20 years ago, a person who owns a company that was heavily regulated by the state's Environment Department was named chair of the committee that handles the budget for that department. Mm-hmm. Now, nobody knew that at the time, but he basically declared a war against that department. And it sort of came out later, oh yeah, he's had huge beef with that department for years. And he owns this company.
Personal beef and, with it.
You know, yeah. Right. And you know, it would have been nice to know when the speaker had appointed him chair of that subcommittee to ask the speaker, how can you do this? This seems like a terrible decision. So that's one example that stands out.
Yeah. Craig, and this is a different issue slightly, but the extent to which we allow those conflicts in Michigan is something that you have focused on for a really long time. Every state doesn't allow that.
No, I mean, we essentially have policies in the state legislature where lawmakers are somewhat free to vote on bills where they have a financial conflict of interest. I mean, there are some, the rules that the House and Senate have put on themselves are very permissive. There is no bright line. If you have a conflict, if you're voting on a bill that directly benefits a business that you own, you know, it's kind of up to you whether you want to abstain on that or not. And because of that, the public scrutiny, the ability of reporters and watchdogs to dig through and flag these things is crucial. Mm-hmm. And before we had any type of financial disclosures, like Zach said, there was no way to know if someone had a conflict that should be something that the public knew about, something that we as reporters should raise to them, because we had to ferret out what do all of these people do in addition to serving in the legislature. It wasn't clear in many cases. You know, an example that's playing out currently is the representative who is the chairwoman of the House Appropriations Committee, a very powerful committee, Angela Whitworth. Mm-hmm. We were able to figure out had a very active role in a public relations firm in Lansing that was working with a bunch of interest groups that had matters before the legislature.
Yes.
And she didn't pull herself out of that arrangement, at least to some extent, until the end of 2022. So while she was serving in the legislature during her first terms, she was still apparently actively involved in this PR firm that was working with interest groups. That's something that, you know, without a financial disclosure, we don't get any information exactly on what her relationship is with this PR firm.
Yeah.
Now we know, according to the disclosure that she filed last week, that she has some type of agreement where she has left the firm, but she is being paid by the firm through this arrangement that led to her departure. So these are all things that, you know, if we don't have something on paper where an office holder is attesting to what's going on, we don't really know because there's nothing requiring them to say.
Yeah, yeah. So this disclosure is, as I described in the open, a pretty basic requirement. It doesn't go very far. There are a lot of things that are still left out of it. But I wonder, from both of you, what the reaction has been among public officials who now have to fill these out about whether they feel comfortable with this kind of disclosure and whether they are trying to find already ways to shield things that maybe are supposed to be a part of this. I know, you know, there's this this inherent dynamic, I think, in regulation, which is that you impose the regulation, and then immediately the people you've imposed it on try to figure ways around it. And that happens all the time. So I'm wondering what the dynamic, I guess, is like in Lansing now that this is part of the wallpaper in the room, that you've got to share at least some of the things that you're up to. Craig, what's it like in Lansing right now?
I think that there's a lot of different reactions from the lawmakers that I've talked to. Some of them are upset that they have to go through this. Some of them are kind of pointing at us in the media and saying, well, you didn't find anything in there, did you? And it's like, well, we did find some things. And, you know, you didn't really give us that much information to actually screen for conflicts of interest. But that's a whole nother subject. And your question's valid. I mean, I think we are seeing some movement and some efforts here that maybe not be you know, we can't say if they're intentional moves to get around the disclosure requirements, but could very easily come to that down the road. And the lead example that we've reported on in our paper is Governor Whitmer. We all know that Governor Whitmer has a book deal of some type mm-hmm. and some value, some financial arrangement between her and Simon & Schuster for her to write a book that's going to come out this summer. In her financial disclosure, we learned that that book deal is not going to likely show up in a future report. We're never going to probably know the details of that arrangement because she has now set up a separate LLC, which her group is describing as an office manager, to manage some of her family's financial transactions called Super Deluxe LLC. So that's a hole in this. Now an office holder can set up a limited liability company and run some of their arrangements through that company. And all they have to report under our current policies is that they have an ownership role in this LLC. So the details of the financial arrangement with the book, if there are potentially other consulting deals, you know, involving her, they could be run through the LLC and never detailed in the disclosure.
And because of the way the disclosure law is set up, this nonprofit is just beyond the scope of it. Is that right?
Yeah, the company is in the disclosure. Like it says, Governor Whitmer has an ownership role, a membership role as an owner in this LLC Super Deluxe. As for what Super Deluxe is doing as a separate entity, you know, the disclosure doesn't get into that because any financial deal is between, you know, the some other company and Super Deluxe, not between the company and Governor Whitmer.
Yeah. Yeah. Zach, what are you hearing about this new requirement and the way people are trying to comply?
Well, a couple things that I think are important to note. One is to me, the single biggest weakness in the implementation statutes the legislature passed to implement what voters did in Proposal 1 of 2022 was the penalty provisions. There is effectively no penalty for lying on your disclosure form. I believe it's like a civil fine. It might as well be 10 cents. It might be $5,000. I don't know. But it's not a criminal penalty. So an elected official or a future candidate could simply choose not to disclose a number of things. And if they do get caught, there's really no penalty other than, you know, maybe the voter, you know, maybe voters decide that's not appropriate and don't elect them. So that to me is the real Achilles heel. And we of course, don't know what we don't know. I do believe most elected officials will do the right thing. But as we know, there are always a few who won't and will look for ways around things and could take advantage of this. Very interesting item, though, to your point about what are people saying about this. Uh-huh. In the last week, the Secretary of State, Jocelyn Benson, asked Attorney General Dana Nessel for a formal opinion on whether the new laws require lawmakers and candidates to report all gifts and travel payments rather than just those that lobbyists report. This is very interesting because the way the implementation statutes were worded effectively require legislators to report nothing that isn't already reported under the lobby law by lobbyists. So if a consultant, and I use that word very deliberately, because a consultant is not a registered lobbyist and thus not subject to the lobby law, but if a consultant who often might do lobby type mm-hmm. activities provides a gift or pays for someone to travel to a conference, under the current interpretation of the new statutes, those aren't reported. But the Secretary of State's asking the Attorney General, what do you think? Does the statute actually require that to be reported? And so when the Attorney General issues an opinion on the subject, it is possible, I'm not going to make any predictions, but it is possible that legislators might find themselves having to report a lot more than what they just did a couple of weeks ago.
Wow.
And that's a wild, I just want to say, you know, this is a wild, wild and key point in all of this. I mean, the way this was written to say you only have to disclose what is already reported elsewhere is really, you know, just quite frankly, a disservice to the people of Michigan. because it is a sign, hey, we're doing something, but we're not actually doing something. And along those same lines, this gets to where I think we're going to go about all of these nonprofits that lawmakers have. There's an easy way around this for lawmakers that, you know, no, they're not talking about because they don't want to talk about it. A lobbyist gives money to a lawmaker's nonprofit, and the nonprofit pays for the food, pays for the trip, pays for some ticket to a game. That would be not disclosed under this because the nonprofit is not a lobbyist and is not, doesn't have to register, even though it's funded by a lobbyist. I mean, that's just, that's one of those things that I sit there and my head just spins as I think about it.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation about personal financial disclosure and our public officials in Lansing. We're going to keep Zach Gorchow and Craig Mauger with us. We also want to have you, our listeners, join the conversation. Call and let us know. Do you know enough about what your elected officials are up to in their private financial lives? Should you know more? Would you like to know more? Are you someone who actually went through the new reports that they had to file and found interesting things? Let us know what those things were. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and either hashtag created equal or at WDET, and we can make you part of the conversation that way. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. You're listening to Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad that you have joined. We're talking about the personal financial disclosures that elected officials in Lansing had to file recently for the very first time here in the state of Michigan. Back in 2022, when we went to the polls, Proposal 1 on the ballot was the provision that would require public officials in Lansing to make just a minimum personal financial disclosure, talk about the kinds of business interests that they had, whether they had other jobs and things like that. We changed the Constitution, I think it was a constitutional change. We'll ask our guests in a minute. But this is the first time that we are now seeing the fruits of that change. And we're talking about what that means. What did we learn from these disclosures? What did we not learn from these disclosures? That's kind of a basic minimum requirement. And what are the things that we should be thinking about in terms of adding more transparency to what the people who represent us are up to? Our guests are Craig Mauger, who is a state government reporter at the Detroit News, someone who has been following personal and political campaign finance issues for a really long time in Lansing. Also with us is Zach Gorchow. He's executive editor and publisher at Gongwar News Service and co-host of the Mishmash State Politics podcast, which is shared by WDET and Gongwar. Zach is also someone who has been following these issues for an awfully long time. We want to hear from you as well, our listeners, about what you make of this. What do you think about the idea of how much we know about the people who represent us? Should we know more? Should we be able to spot more of the potential conflicts of interest that the people who represent us are doing their jobs and supposedly trying to keep in mind? 313-577-1019 is a number, the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and either hashtag created equal or at WDET, and we can include you in the conversation that way. Okay, Craig and Zach, I want to talk about a specific case that is kind of unfolding at the same time that these disclosures have been taking place. Lee Chatfield, who was the Speaker of the House in recent years, is accused of a wide range, in fact, of misdeeds while he was Speaker. Embezzlement is one of the charges. There are lots of things kind of piled in there that have to do with finances and some other kinds of misconduct. I want to talk about the environment in Lansing that leads us to things like this. Lee Chatfield is not the first person to be caught in and accused of these kinds of misdeeds. We've had a long history of this kind of problem. I want to talk about this kind of transparency that we're moving toward and the effect it might have on someone like Lee Chatfield. If we'd had this personal financial disclosure, if we had more in terms of transparency, would Lansing look different? Would people think harder, perhaps, about doing the things that they're doing? Or would this catch them earlier? Zach, I'm going to start with you. How does Lee Chatfield and the trouble that he faces, how does it fit into this conversation about transparency and disclosure?
Well, as Craig mentioned, one of the big areas that was not included in the disclosure laws were the nonprofit funds that a legislator or elected official organizes and raises money for. And that is what the former speaker, Lee Chatfield, is accused of doing. And I believe this has now ratcheted up the pressure quite massively on the legislature to deal with these nonprofits, or at least attempt to deal with them in some way. It won't be easy. The U.S. Supreme Court has been issuing a number of rulings that provide some free speech protections in this regard. But it's abundantly clear that, you know, big surprise when you allow people in positions of power to raise unlimited sums of money, never have to disclose who gave it, and only have to provide very limited disclosures in how they used it, that a rogue person can exploit that situation. We saw it with Kwame Kilpatrick, and, you know, obviously the attorney general has a case, is going to have to prove her case against Lee Chatfield, but at least the initial outlines of what they're accusing him of using $133,000 that he raised for this nonprofit to pay things like personal credit card bills and travel and live high on the hog, is pretty damning. And I think it has raised the pressure quite a bit.
Yeah. Craig, as I said, Lee Chatfield's not the first person in Lansing or in lots of other places, of course, in our state. We deal with this issue, it seems like, over and over again. It's a little bit of Groundhog Day, really. How different would things be, or should things be, given that we're now actually, you know, requiring some personal financial disclosure, but I think we're on a path toward more.
Yeah, I think if there were some additional disclosure requirements, more detailed, more often, some of this could have been prevented or flagged a lot earlier. I mean, keep in mind, Lee Chatfield was serving in the state house for 6 years, and he didn't become the speaker until his final 2 years in 2019 and 2020. And, you know, when he rose up to this position, he got there over, you know, series of years. And then when he got there, all of a sudden he had the power to decide what bills the house would vote on.
Right.
You know, if someone could have looked into some of this earlier, I mean, the attorney general has said, you know, basically there was no way to look into any of this because we didn't know anything until, you know, his sister-in-law brought forward allegations of sexual abuse after he was out of office. But keep in mind, you know, this is something I was just looking at as we began our conversation today. Before Lee Chatfield even got his seat in the House, he was paying relatives wages out of his candidate committee. This was in 2014 after he won his primary. That is very unusual. He was paying his brothers, he was paying his wife money out of his candidate committee before he even took his seat. And this idea that there were no red flags until after he left is just wrong. And there have been a lot of red flags about a lot of people that have served in the legislature that no one, at least forward-facingly, has looked into. And this conversation that Dana Nessel and Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson are really starting and igniting here is going to be a big one.
Yeah.
They have both said that there is a culture of corruption in Lansing. And think about the, you know, the courage that it takes for them to come out and say that when their party holds the governor's office, their party controls all this, you know, controls the majority of the seats in the House and Senate. I mean, that's a big statement for them to make. And it is going to be fascinating to see how the members of their own party react to that over the coming months.
Go ahead, Zach.
I was going to say, I think the culture issue is what really in many ways underlines a lot of this. Craig's absolutely right. There were red flags on Lee Chatfield before he was speaker, and they were flat out ignored or looked the other way by a lot of people in town. The story I always think of is when, you know, when he was the speaker pro tem. So that's in the leadership, his second term. He's not in charge, but he was clearly a big rising member of the House. He chaired an important committee. All of a sudden, his brothers were on the staff of two other Republican members of the legislature. And I remember thinking, this feels very Kwame Kilpatrick, you know, the friends and family plan, because, you know, he was a very powerful member of the House already. And, you know, what are these members supposed to do when Lee Chatfield says, hey, my brother could really use a job,
right?
Put him on your staff. And, oh, by the way, he has no qualifications to do that. But what if they say no? How's that going to affect their committee assignments? Are they going to not have support for their reelection bids? And the Lansing, and when I say Lansing, I mean the eight blocks around the Capitol, really collectively just looked the other way.
Yes.
When that happened. And it was a red flag then. I never thought that it would lead to where we are now. But this was in the realm of possibility.
Yeah. I wonder, you both have referenced Attorney General Dana Nessel and, of course, Jocelyn Benson, who's the Secretary of State, and the conversation that they've started. In the next segment, we are going to talk about Michigan compared to some other states and some of the gaps. But I wonder if we can talk just a little before we break about the momentum and where it's coming from, and I guess where it could lead, not just with this kind of transparency, but also with things like the Freedom of Information Act, which doesn't apply still to the governor and the legislature, even though Governor Whitmer campaigned saying that she would change that. She has not yet. Where are we headed? And is this an issue that I guess will appear before voters again to change things? Or I guess is the legislature prepared to deal with some of it? I'll start with you this time, Zach.
Well, it's a great question. I think one thing to watch in the short term is a group of House Democrats that I would describe as not totally thrilled with the direction House Democratic leadership has taken on some issues. This would be a more left-leaning group. They've introduced a series of bills to toughen the personal financial disclosure requirements, start to get at the nonprofit realm, and a number of other kind of good government activities. But of course, anyone could introduce a bill. Whether these will actually get traction and move is another question. But, you know, the Chatfield charges, I think, do put some fuel behind them in making that case. Over in the Senate, a committee has moved a bill, a pair of bills to the floor of the Senate that would expand the Freedom of Information Act to the legislature and the governor. Those bills, in my assessment, do have some flaws as far as how robust they are and a number of loopholes. That being said, it would certainly be much more than what there is now. And I think as far as the financial disclosure, I don't see that heading back to the ballot anytime soon. It's very difficult to change the Constitution once it's in there. And it would require a citizen's petition almost certainly to do it. But I do think There's at least a distant possibility when it comes to the Freedom of Information Act that if the legislature and the governor and future legislatures and the governors do not do this, if they do not expand the statute to their offices, if they continue to allow the act to be so ineffectual where documents are turned over really at the whim of the public body, there could be a ballot issue on that. There are groups out there that are getting fed up and frustrated with how public bodies are handling it. And I do think the legislature is running the risk at some point, if they don't fix this, it's going to be fixed for them and they may not like how it's fixed.
how it gets done, right? Yeah, go ahead, Greg.
Well, I mean, the difficult thing with the ballot measure angle of all of this is that it takes in Michigan through our system an incredible amount of money to fund a petition gathering campaign. And these issues are not issues that people with an incredible amount of money want to fund. If you have money and you're engaged in politics, you likely take advantage of some of these angles. And you probably don't want to shut them down. In all of the good government type campaigns that we have seen lately, there has been some type of partisan interest in getting them on the ballot and getting them passed. That's not the case with these. So I'm always very, I always don't think that that is something that is going to happen. At the end of the day, my belief is that this is a legislative problem that the legislators have created, and it is going to be on them to fix it. And they have shown no signs. I mean, there's a group of them that have introduced bills to at least start a conversation, but the leadership has shown no signs as of right now that they're willing to put these things on the board, the things that many of them, before they got in their leadership positions, have called for. They have shown no signs that they're willing to put these on the board and actually change what's occurring in Lansing. I think my read on it currently is that they're hoping that some of this will blow over. The problem for them on that is that these cases will likely go to trial. And all of these details that have occurred beneath these allegations, how bills have been passed in Lansing, what really goes on behind the scenes, that's all going to come out in a trial.
Yes.
And this conversation is not going to end.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and to that point, when in December, when Attorney General Nessel announced she was charging two former top aides to Lee Chatfield, but wasn't announcing charges against Chatfield yet.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, I became very skeptical she was going to charge and that her office would charge Lee Chatfield. So it's been almost 2 years. What more is it going to take?
Yeah.
But she did. She was true to her word that the investigation was actually still open and active. And I think kind of threw the book at him in a lot of ways, that 13 felony charges for financial crimes. But she said something at her press conference announcing those charges that I think should send some shudders throughout Lansing, which is that this is still an open and active an investigation. Now, prosecutors often say that just to sort of because they need to say it and they don't want to lose a chance to keep people on guard. But, Dana Nessel just put her money where her mouth was. She did keep the investigation open and charged the biggest fish.
Yep.
And now she's charged Lee Chatfield and his wife,
Stephanie
Chatfield. And, what might those two be willing to do as far as cutting a deal? It would be the kind of thing that would make me real nervous. The other possibility is the prosecution will start calling some of the donors to that fund, and asking them to testify about what happened. And I'm sure that's something a lot of these donors really don't want to do.
Yeah.
So this could get really interesting. And to Craig's point, we'll definitely stay in the news.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue talking with Zach Gorchow and Craig Mauger about personal financial disclosure in Lansing. We'll also get going with you, the listeners, on the phones and on social. Call and let us know, are you satisfied with the level of transparency in Michigan's government? How much do you trust our elected officials to be doing the people's business and not their own while while they're in office. What do you think of this new requirement for personal financial disclosure? Do you think we need more than what we're getting? 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag created equal or at WDET, and we can include you that way. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. Welcome back to Created Equal. We're talking about transparency and disclosure in Lansing, a new era of transparency and disclosure that started recently as a result of a decision that we, the voters, made at the polls in 2022, requiring public officials, elected officials, to give us at least basic information about their personal finances so we can see whether they have conflicts of interest. Our guests are Craig Mauger, who is a state government reporter at the Detroit News, and Zach Gorchow, who's executive editor and publisher at Gongwer News Service. We're talking about what we learned from this disclosure, what we can't learn from the disclosure because it is so basic, and what might come next? What more might we do? We would love to hear from you on the phones and on social. 313-577-1019 is the number. And you can go to Twitter and hashtag created equal or at WDET, and we can include you. Let's start today with Madeline in Mount Clemens. Madeline, what's on your mind?
You believe the fundamentals in America is greed, corruption, incompetence, failure, and chaos. And it trickles down through the whole economy, which I experience today and every day. And it probably costs the U.S. economy trillions of dollars. It's just counterproductive, but we all participate in it.
Madeline, that's a pretty dark view of our economy and our politics. Zach and Craig, I want to building off of Madeline's question or comment, let's talk about consequences that accompany these new regulations. I mean, it's wonderful to require that there be some personal financial disclosure, but what if I'm a legislator and I decide, no, I don't really want to do that, or I want to leave stuff off because I don't want to share it? What would the consequences look like, Craig?
I mean, there's not much teeth here, as Zach noted earlier. I mean, there's not a great system for punishing someone or determining that someone lied on these forms. You know, that's one of the real weaknesses of what the legislators enacted here.
And what could the consequences look like, Zach? I mean, if we had a better system of this, I mean, what could you do? I mean, you can't throw people out of office, I think, for stuff like this. But what would be a reasonable way to say we're going to hold you accountable for this?
I mean, it would be the kind of thing you do when the candidates for office fill out their paperwork, which is you attest under penalty of perjury that the information you are submitting is the truth, and you can't knowingly lie. All there is here is a civil fine. It's either $5,000 or $10,000, and there's no criminal penalty. But to me, that's the obvious answer, is you sign a statement that you're swearing under oath that the information, to the best of your knowledge, is the truth. And if you were to lie or leave stuff off, you could face some consequences. And everyone knows a perjury charge is very difficult to prove. You have to prove that it was deliberate falsification. Mm-hmm. But if you had a true rogue who left off just reams of information about their finances, they would put themselves in legal jeopardy. Right now, there's no consequence other than public shame.
Yeah. So I want to talk in the minutes that we have left about the gap that exists between Michigan and other states. Craig, this is something that you have focused on for a really long time. Talk about how far we are from what other states are doing. I mean, you know, they have these rankings from time to time of states that compare them in terms of transparency and disclosure and things. We always seem to get very bad grades. You know, Michigan is usually an F if they're using an A to F scale. So talk about states that are, I guess, models and things that they're doing that we just aren't even thinking about doing.
Yeah, I mean, about a decade ago, as many people know, we were rated 50th out of 50 states for our system in place to combat corruption. That was by the Center for Public Integrity. You can Google it and look up all the metrics that they use. And I just think that's really noteworthy that about 10 years ago, we were rated last in the country for our systems in place to deter corruption. Now we fast forward to 2023 and 2024, and we've had 9 different political figures in our state over the last 13 months charged with crimes involving the movement of money.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can draw a direct line from, you know, the weakness of our laws to people finding that they have a system in place where they can do things and they think it won't be detected. There seems to be some type of connection there between those two things. When you talk about other states, I mean, I often talk about the federal government's requirements because a lot of the same Michigan office holders who are, you know, begrudgingly filing these disclosure documents will run for Congress one day if they get the chance and submit their disclosure that is a lot more detailed. How is it more detailed? It's more detailed because you have to disclose all of the travel that's provided to you, you know, for free. If someone funds a trip for you to go to the Bahamas, you have to disclose that. In Michigan, you only have to disclose it if it's funded by someone who is specifically a registered lobbyist. So there's a lot of ways around that. Another example, you have to disclose specific information, financial ranges, financial details about your different assets and income levels. Why does that matter? Let's look exactly at this Lee Chatfield situation. The most alarming charge here against him is that he paid off a $132,000 debt on his personal credit card through his nonprofit.
Right.
If we would have known through a financial disclosure that Lee Chatfield was building up a $132,000 personal credit card debt, which is very much something that would have to be disclosed on these forms if they provided more details, we could have asked him, you know, what's going on with this debt? And if it all of a sudden disappeared, we could have said, how did you pay off a $132,000?
Where'd you get that money?
You had previously when your salary is about $70,000. I mean, so these have real world implications.
Yeah. Yeah. Zach, we've got about a minute left. I want to give you the last word here.
I mean, I think I think this Chatfield situation is going to drive what happens the rest of the year on this. You know, what other details come out? How much pressure is put on the legislature? And the other thing I think we all should be watching for is, I believe on May 15th, candidates, non-incumbents for the legislature are going to have to file their disclosures. And so that's going to be really interesting because it'll be our first chance to look at people who might be elected to the legislature that we really know very little about, that we're going to be get the chance to learn something about them, too.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Zach Gorchow of Gongwer News Service and Craig Mauger of the Detroit News. I can't think of two better people to have had this conversation with. Thanks so much for your time and your expertise. Thanks for joining us on Created Equal.
A lot of information, but also at the same time, it's like, we need more teeth in some of these new regulations.
Yeah. I think the frustration that you could hear in Craig and Zach's voices is about the years they have spent trying to learn more and help the public learn more about the people who represent us. I mean, this is such a key part of democratic participation, knowing who you're voting for, right, knowing who's representing you and what interests that they hold other than yours. Right. And we're just not, we're not close to doing that in a reasonable way in Michigan.
I hope they said that the only thing, when it's up to the legislatures to make this happen, and then kind of the only consequence at this point is public shame. I hope our public shame can be strong enough to influence more changes and getting more teeth to these rules and regulations.
Yeah.
So that's what I have to say for the takeaway on that one.
A lot of work to do.
Work to do.
All right, that's going to do it for us on Created Equal. Remember that you can listen to recent episodes at WDET.org, and we would love for you to subscribe to our podcast, where you can leave us a rating or a review. Created Equal is produced by Carrie Jr. II and David Lines. Our audio editing is by Connor Anderson, and the music is by Sam Bobian. Created Equal is a production of WDET, a listener-supported service of Wayne State University. This is WDET-FM, Detroit Public Radio, your connection to news, music, and conversation.
Genre doesn't matter. Good music does. On In the Groove here on WDET at noon, the best in new releases from Detroit and beyond, plus deep cuts you won't hear anywhere else. In the Groove today at noon on WDET.
If you feel like you're paying more for groceries since the pandemic, you are not alone.
You know, we haven't seen food price inflation like this in an election year in some time.
How inflation and food prices are affecting voters and potentially the 2024 election on All Things Considered from NPR News.
I'm Russ McNamara. Join me for All Things Considered, weekday afternoons at 4 on 101.9 WDET.